Welcome back, Survivor fans. This is episodes 13 and 14 of season 25 of the longest-running reality show on TV. That's not even true.
No, sure it is.
What about the real world?
Oh, yeah, you might be right. Although season count-wise, we may Survivor may have caught Real World.
Yes. Doing two a year for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, Real World was too, but they slowed down for a long time.
They have become something completely different than what they were.
They definitely have. I mean, now it's just...
There was actually like someone who was like 35 on the first season.
Well, and exactly. They've long since abandoned
Now if you're 23, you're old on that
show.
Yeah,
that's true. They've got 27 seasons. So season-wise, this is definitely the longest. Real World is definitely the longest. And also, by the calendar, I mean, they've been around since 92, whereas Survivor is just 2000.
Right. But, you know, hey, Survivor's, yeah, I would say the audience is at least, you know, much larger.
Yeah. Real World is, the thing Real World has done, though, is they've started recycling places. I mean, I guess you kind of had to.
Survivor hasn't?
After 20 seasons. Yeah, but they've at least come up with creative names to make it sound like they're not.
But they haven't gone anywhere. They spent 3 seasons in Samoa.
No, they spent like 6.
Okay, they spent 6 seasons in Samoa. Next time they'll be back in the Philippines, so...
That's true, although they're calling it, what is it, Curaquan or something? Or
Karamoan.
Karamoan, no, I was just kidding. I had the C and an R. About it.
Good enough for government work.
A lot of vowels.
We got a lot to talk about, Chris.
No more dilly-dallying.
No more dilly-dallying, yeah. All right. So we're going to talk briefly about episode 13 and then get to the meat. The first shot we get is Abby coming back saying she's awed to be around, and everyone concludes, if they didn't already know, they conclude based on the fact that she's surprised to still be there, that she has no hidden immunity.
Right. Yeah, she didn't. This wasn't exactly well folded into her plan of the hidden immunity, I don't think, seeing as she decides later on in the episode to try to continue the ruse, which is clearly just baloney.
I have to say, at the very least, she's trying something. We've had far too many people that we've podcasted about who refuse to try anything to change their fate.
Yeah. It's just so clearly futile.
Again, clearly to us, because...
Clearly futile. Well, and it's also just like, I mean, like, she's just not keeping... if you're gonna do this, you gotta give it the hard sell. And she's like, she gave it the hard sell for a while, but now she's given up, so you
she
can't
let her
go
guard
back
down.
To the hard sell.
She let her guard down. Exactly. It was a moment. Yes. Reward challenge, they have to slide over this big constructed ramp, and then, of course, it's set up so that they tumble coming out of it, which is always excellent television.
Right, because it's got like a little like slickness to it, right?
Yes. And then they put a slip and
slide
on top.
They hit the sand, and then it's
of...
like Tumble City.
Yeah. Well, you've all your momentum going, then you hit sand, and it's like... Yeah. Those two things don't go together. It's called inertia, Chris. It's a physics concept.
I'm glad we've got a science teacher on the podcast to break these things down.
Right. So throw some rings on, Malcolm wins, and my first note is that it was a blessing and a curse to win this challenge.
Malcolm did not win this challenge. Mike did.
Never mind. Michael won this challenge, and it was a blessing and a curse for Michael.
Which one of us is the one that has notes on this episode?
Both of us.
Not really.
Yeah, shut up. I think I have the word Malcolm on the same line as Scoopin', and I read it wrong. So.
Oh, whatever. Okay. So you do have the right notes.
Right, yeah. So, you know, who you choose on this could really be bad because it could come back to haunt you. And
yep.
Better to just not win. And, you know, if you get chosen, you do, and you don't, you don't. But
yeah, I kind of agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, Abby even bitched afterwards, I guess my vote doesn't mean anything. Which was great.
Well, I mean, yeah. Again, part of the, like, she's thrown in the towel on her little, I have another idol routine. but, I mean, like, if you're going to say that, then, like, clearly you don't have an idol. Because if you did, you'd be playing it tonight. But, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it's just it's a tough position to be in just based on the friction you could create by not choosing someone. And once again, it was Denise not chosen, and she repeatedly was not chosen to go on reward challenges, mostly being taken for granted, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, she... Yeah, I'm looking at the track record here. She went on the first two rewards.
But she won her place on some of those.
But she competed both of those were team. Yeah, both of those were team competitions for reward.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Which led to... this led to the joy of Denise and Abby back at camp together.
Yeah.
Which was excellent television, as always. They didn't let us down.
That was comical.
And then the rest of the gang went to swim with whale sharks, and Scoopin managed to get hurt by a whale shark, and Malcolm touched one, even though they told him not to. So,
what is a whale shark? Is it neither a whale nor a shark?
It is a shark. It's a fish, but not all sharks are bloodthirsty savages.
Okay, yeah.
Some are, well, I guess it's not... He still eats fish. It's just little, like, krill-type fish, like a whale.
Right, yeah, and
so,
not humans.
He has the diet of a whale, but the evolutionary history of a shark.
I see. Interesting.
Yes.
It would have been nifty if this one bit somebody in the arm and somebody had to bite back.
Are you getting
my reference even?
No, I missed it.
It's the season one of the seasons you weren't into, Survivor All-Stars. And Richard Hatch is out, like, he sees, like, a little sand shark, you know, one of those, like, you know, foot and a half, 2 foot long guys. And he spots it, and he's like, oh, I'm getting that thing so we can cook it and eat it. And as I recall, Colby was on his tribe and was recounting the story in a confessional and was just, like, in awe of who Richard Hatch is. Because Richard Hatch, like, he's just, like, sitting there waiting for it, and he finally grabs it, and he's, like, holding the tail, and the thing's, like, wiggling around. And then, like, in a moment of, like, just briefly not paying attention, the shark has just enough freedom to, like, latch on to, like, Hatch's bicep. And is, like, sinking his teeth into his bicep. And so Hatch, in retaliation, rather than, like, trying to pry the jaw off, just bites the shark while it's biting him.
Wow.
Just comical.
There's a YouTube clip titled, Richard Bites a Shark.
Yep.
Wow. I'll have to watch that later.
It's good stuff. Yeah, there you go. A little hold on for the listeners.
Yeah, I missed that reference. But this one, you know, if it bit you in the arm, it basically would be biting all of you.
You wouldn't have
gigantic,
any arm left.
Gaping mouth, and I don't even know if it has like a significant pair of teeth to do that. I think it's sort of
yeah.
More
did
like
we see any shots of the mouth?
It swims with its mouth open. You can't miss it. I don't know. We come back to camp and we find out that Denise was woken up to fang marks in her neck, Chris.
Yeah,
fang marks.
That was something else. I mean, were they really fang marks, or was it two separate bites?
There were two little holes.
But was
separated.
It two? I mean, could it have been two separate bites? I mean, like that looked. If I recall correctly, they looked far enough apart that it was like, if those are fangs, then whatever the heck bit you had a big freaking mouth.
Right. That's what I'm thinking, though.
So is it like a snake?
No, I think it's probably some sort of ridiculous spider. That's what I have to guess.
Yeah, like a tarantula or something?
I don't know, but whatever it was, if she had actually seen it, she probably would have passed out. I don't know. I don't even want to think about it.
That's crazy.
It's the kind of thing that makes me never want to ever apply.
Yeah, that really was a moment that gave me pause, like, maybe it's all right that they didn't come calling.
They don't actually take the bugs off the island. They're still around.
Right. Yeah, it's one of those, like, you know, you sort of forget, you sort of think they're just at this, like, you know, crappy hotel or something for the time they're there.
They're genuinely out there.
But they're genuinely out there, yeah. I mean, between their discussion of the rain in the finale and this, I mean, they really are out in the elements. It's not just a little resort.
There was a note about how this season 25 was shot at the end of the rainy season.
Yeah.
And that the next one was shot after the rainy season.
Yeah.
So there will not be.
They're almost back to back,
problem.
As I understand.
Yeah. But as far as I know, the rainy season is Springtime, our springtime-ish.
Yeah, because this ended, I think this season wrapped in April, if I recall correctly.
Right. So, I'm sure they shot that over the summer, which means, well, I guess it's always hot. I was going to be like, well, it means it's hotter, but no, it's always hot.
What a pain that must be. I mean,
it's on the equator. There's no seasons.
The season wrapped in April, and like you're just, especially for Denise, Mike, and Blair.
Having to sit 8 months on it?
Sit 8 months on this, have no clue. You probably have some clue, but I don't know, they probably swear the jury members to secrecy so that they're not revealing to the, so that one of them doesn't end up thinking they have it in the bag.
Multi-million-dollar lawsuits because of, ruining the suspense of what they have.
Exactly.
All right, so we go to the immunity challenge, and they have two planks of wood with which to traverse a rope bridge.
I like those challenges. I'm a fan of these.
You know, I just wish we had another one this season, like the one we gushed over, where
the Boston
Rob passed out on the
pyramid. Stairway to Heaven.
Yeah, where they had all the pieces and they had to bring them up one at a time and make the stairway, and that was.
I think that's what we have to start calling that challenge: Stairway to Heaven. Because they nearly died doing it. I mean,
but something like that where they're literally giving all of themselves.
Yeah, it's just absolute exhaustion
to get to the end.
Yeah,
which was awesome.
Of course, I guess you have to. I guess they got to be careful with that, especially that late in the season. You know, you're already pretty worn pretty thin.
Well, that's it. Wouldn't take much. You wouldn't even need to build a
I guess that's true. You don't have to make
it
bad. It doesn't have to be grueling to a in-season NFL athlete. It just has to be grueling to them, which could just mean going down to the corner to get some milk at 7-Eleven.
Chris, there was a season where they made them hike 8 miles to camp. Like that was great.
Really?
Yeah.
I remember
this ridiculous
that.
Death march. I think it was Panama or one of those Central American ones.
Well, it was. They did it in Guatemala when for the Bobby John Stephanie returning season.
Uh huh. I think I think that's the one I
remember.
Of.
That was the first one I remember that happening. But they also did it. Was it Tocantins? I believe Coach's first season.
I'm not sure.
The small waify girl who ended up feeling like she got sick the first couple days, or she came in with the flu or something, but she actually won. As the last person drafted onto their tribe or something like that, she won
a ride to camp.
A ride to camp, and everybody else walked or whatever it was. But it was a major hike.
And I remember that being she's already sort of alienated, and they're gonna make her more alienated by not being on the walk,
right? Or something. It was something along those lines. I can't remember.
I hope she had lunch waiting when they arrived.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
But yeah, I like this challenge. I'm in general a fan of this planks on the rope bridge thing.
It seemed very even. People were progressing at a fairly even rate.
And it's also interesting because it's there's some opportunity for strategy there, a risk taker like Malcolm.
Yeah, taking more
who trying to do three slots at a time or something, which nearly cost him.
Right. Well, it did cost him, but he was so sick fast at that puzzle.
Yep.
It was unreal. Everyone else had, who knows how long it was, but they had a significant advantage over him, and he made up all of it. And it looked like Denise had it, right? Didn't Denise have it almost completely?
Yeah, Denise was close, yes.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, Malcolm was just doing his best Penner impersonation.
Yeah, Denise was down to three pieces left and couldn't quite get them to fall. Probably had one out of place somewhere else in the puzzle.
It's almost the same story at the reward challenge in the finale.
I'm having trouble recalling off the top of my head what
the dragon puzzle. Was. The dragon puzzle.
Oh yeah. That's right. Yeah, the dragon puzzle.
Yeah.
So Malcolm wins immunity again.
And Blair and Scoopin are left to debate the merits of keeping Abby versus keeping Denise and potentially her upsetting Malcolm in the immunity challenge at the last immunity challenge.
Yeah, that was, it was interesting. It was an interesting thought. Certainly out of the three of them, you know, it's, I guess maybe it's debatable between Denise and Scoopin who has the better shot of beating Malcolm in a challenge. Certainly, Blair is not an obvious threat to win that, to win a final immunity challenge.
You wouldn't think so.
You wouldn't think so.
No, you wouldn't think so.
Foreshadowing.
Yes, I guess it's a little surprise. I mean, obviously in hindsight, it seems like the thing, but yeah. It seemed like if Denise or Malcolm got to a final three, they would win. So their only chance to get rid of both of them was to take Denise now, Malcolm later, and, you know, take your chances with that, at least to have a chance to get rid of both of them. But that discussion.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You can't get rid of both of them if you don't get rid of one of them now.
Right.
That's a good point. And I don't know. I mean, Abby laid into Scoopin at final at that tribal council.
Yeah.
Saying you're just like, you're an idiot. You're just a moron. Like, you're going to lose.
You're going to lose, right. Yeah, that was her point, is you're going to lose.
It was really funny, too, because, like, there was something about that moment, like, the way she was carrying herself, the way she, like, the confidence with which she spoke there in that moment. Like, there was something interesting. I don't know what it was, but just something about that got me, and it was like, it just seemed so genuine, you know? Like, and the funny thing was, is there's a, I kind of wondered, is she playing here? Is she playing a game? Is she trying to make herself look like such a bitch that there's no possible way she would ever win at the final tribal council? Right. So you read now, like before you were really supposed to take me. Now it's just, it's an open and shut case. Like, take me. Look how, like, brazen I am willing to be about, you know, about my disregard for everybody else.
This was her Hail Mary, it was a really horrible person doing it, or like just the way it carried out was really awful. But at the very least, it was an honest attempt to make herself the most desirable person to sit next to at the end.
Yeah.
And for that alone, it was the right move, even if it made her look horrible.
Yeah, well, it was even better because it was the truth, right? I mean,
yeah,
it's the absolute truth.
Mm-hmm. She's not winning against Scoop and Lisa at the end.
She's not winning against anybody. I mean,
right? Yes, right.
She maybe against like RC if people are just sick of her laugh.
It's amazing. You know, it's amazing how much she didn't break the laugh out during the game.
Yeah.
Almost. As if she was aware of how awful it was.
Yeah, I was wondering that myself, because it comes up in the final tribal council when she talks. The laugh comes out that we discovered in the Ponderosa videos that, like, oh, like just fingernails
on a
blackboard.
Our boy at EW, Dalton Ross, he pegged it right from the beginning. He's like, this laugh is going to drive you insane, but she never broke it out. And
yeah,
that alone.
It's so funny that
she knows it's annoying.
You think so?
She has to. Why else would she, like, if she was oblivious to it, she would have let it out during the game.
Do you think, but I mean, but could you really be that good at the game that you literally alter or hide your laugh for, how long was she there? 2 weeks? Like, 2 solid weeks of, like, not breaking?
I don't know what to tell you, but it's constantly out at Ponderosa. It was out during her jury speech.
Well, it's not even the Ponderosa. It's like, it's just in her confessionals.
Yeah.
Which is, again, like, that's the surprising thing. Like, we didn't even hear it in a confessional when she was in the game. Or maybe we did, and it was just like...
No.
It was... I wonder if it was because, like, it's broken up by the fact that there's so many other people around, so you only get a little bit of it. But then those Ponderosa videos, like, she's the first one there, right? So, So in those first few Ponderosa videos, and by the way, they did, I think, 4 videos on her when there were only like a couple of everybody else, mostly because she just didn't want to shut up. So they're like, all right, well, roll tape.
Or should I be doing
it? Like, and there's nobody else at Ponderosa, so it's just her. So it's like
echoing from the wall,
right?
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh goodness.
All right, moving on.
Indeed.
Where are we?
I think we're on to the beginning of the finale now.
Yeah, Penner flicked somebody off at Tribal as they were going to vote.
Yeah, who was it? I didn't know. I remember that now, and I wasn't sure who he was flicking off.
No clue.
It Abby Maria? Was it Denise?
I have no idea. What?
Yeah, it was very strange.
Who does he have cause to flick off?
Apparently many people, as we'll find out in the episode.
Yeah, wow, that's good foreshadowing.
But, it's funny, as we get into the finale here, and, you know, the finale always starts with, like, a solid 5-minute warm-up.
I don't watch it.
You don't watch it?
I don't.
I love it. I love it because I forget about, like, I had forgotten about the creepy torch snuff. And that was in the little recap there.
The
of like
creepy torch snuff.
With Dawson.
Oh.
when he snuffs her, and then she just sort of like lingers and then like pretend and seems to believe there's a moment occurring. That probes...
You mean the moment that he's had with like 150 other survivors? Or
right. That's my favorite part. It's like she's convinced it's a moment, and it's like literally the guy has snuffed 300 torches. Literally 300 torches. And then the best part is they show his reaction afterwards, which I'm not sure if we had seen in the original episode, where he just gives one of those, like, it's a, you know, hands out to the side, shoulder shrug, like, don't know what that was, but okay.
All right. Ready for anything.
Yeah. Scoopin' opens the new material with an excellent analogy after they're coming back after having voted out Abby. He said it felt like having a tumor removed. Like,
wow.
They just felt like so much better coming back to camp. And it's really funny. I mean, they had mentioned it in a couple other, I don't know if it was him or maybe Malcolm, but I think it was Malcolm who'd said it in a previous episode that like this is how much of a emotional drain and just negative presence she is in the camp that like you're seriously entertaining voting out this person that you otherwise, is a no-brainer to bring with you to the finals.
That's how bad it was.
That's how much of a morale drag she was.
Well, I guess we've finally figured out that there is a limit to how horrible someone can be before they force themselves out of the game. Philip never got there, but Abby did.
Well, he wasn't, like, horrible. He was just, like, weird.
Weird.
I guess he was a little
bit
horrible
to some people.
To some of the girls, yeah.
Yeah.
But he mostly was weird and just kooky. And like
don't call him crazy, Chris.
Trotting his pink underwear around and stuff.
Don't call him crazy because that's racist.
was that what it was? They called him crazy and that was now a race thing?
That was a race thing.
That's right, that was it, yeah.
We had an award-winning podcast about that, Chris.
Did we?
We did.
I don't know if it was award-winning, but I'll take your word for it.
Oh, it was incendiary.
Was that one?
I would say.
Was that one of our more heavily downloaded episodes?
I don't know, but
I don't even know what our download numbers are like anymore.
Maybe a discussion board
in
Mongolia
Korea or whatever. Yeah, the six episodes that we just get absolutely peppered on, that we somehow have gotten like 500 downloads, like even just in the last 3 months, like for a show that aired two seasons ago, three.
We're,
seasons
we're
ago.
Someone's tool of propaganda, Chris. That's all I can think about.
Kim Jong Il is a did he die?
Yeah, he's gone.
He's gone. Well, he was an avid listener. That's why our numbers are down. Let's be honest. He was making a major contingent in North Korea listen and download and listen, so.
Right, yeah.
That's why
we're the populace
down.
To listen.
Sorry, advertisers.
That's all right.
We'll get them back up.
So Scoopin makes a deal with Malcolm to vote together, and he has this idea that he can beat Malcolm, but just based on his story, his story basically being the returning player that survived. I'm guessing that's what he's based on, and that was his story at Tribal, so.
Right.
I don't know. It was a weird move, although I guess people aren't just in a deal-making mood.
Yeah, I guess. I don't remember this interaction so well.
Yeah.
They had basically already made... they basically already made their deal at... at the reward, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They decided the Denise was not someone they wanted to sit next to, and she was the one that had to go.
Right.
That's what they decided. Which, right. You know, they, you know, the Scoopin' and Lisa afterwards said that, you know, at this point we have to say yes to everything. So, you know, it was kind of like we said yes, but
right,
keeping our options open.
Right.
Which they did.
Yeah.
All right. So the reward challenge, our favorite recapper, Dalton Ross, not a fan of giving out a advantage at the final tribal, which is what they were playing for.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that, especially because it's like, it's not. This isn't even a reward challenge. This is just stage one of the immunity challenge, that, and stage two is tomorrow. That's all, you know?
And I was going into this episode telling the people that I communicate most with about this, that I believed it was going to be a final two, because generally in the season finale you have challenge,
two
tribal,
challenge, yeah,
tribal, and then the jury, tribal council.
Right.
But apparently they switched it on us. It was reward challenge.
Well, I think
challenge.
It's because they still wanted to go to three. They just didn't have the numbers because Dana had had self removed.
They usually build that contingency in where it's like,
yeah, I mean, they had 18 people to start this season. So I wonder if they just started out. I mean, were they doing reward challenges early?
No.
The first few weeks?
No.
Yeah, I guess they didn't. And so that might have been part of it. And so maybe they were doing vote outs like every two or three, every like 2 days early on. Because otherwise they should make it, I mean, if it's every three.
No, it's not.
It's not every three. No, no, I know. But you, that
that's
used
how
to
the formula
be,
used to be, yeah. That's how the formula used to be. It was like a day of rest, the day of the reward challenge, and the day of tribal challenge.
Right.
Immunity challenge, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously that's not it anymore, because otherwise you'd end up with way more people after 39 days. I love how 39 days is still, like, the recipe. like they don't, like, it's somehow, like, it's become, like, I mean, is it just me, or is it like, is that like a little
but,
bit? Like,
I mean, think about what the condition they're in after 39 days, though. They're pretty rough.
Oh yeah, know? But I mean, like, I feel like it's like survivor lore now. Like, that's the number. Like, everybody knows that the number is 39 days, and it's almost like they can't, they just can't change that,
right?
For fear of like,
it's part of their tag, you know?
Yeah.
18 Americans.
Well, plus, they would
days.
Have to like, well, 18 Americans. That number changes season to season.
It does.
They go, sometimes it's 20, sometimes it's 16. Actually, they don't go down to 16 anymore, really.
No.
But
it's know, for it's, that it's, contingency of the medical evac, which is the right thing to do.
Right, yeah. But I guess maybe they hold the 39 days and don't change it just so that, like, you know, for the record books, right? You know, you want apples to apples in the record books, right?
Right, that's why I don't want to expand the NFL season, Chris. That's exactly why.
Right. Well, I mean, because, you know, like, it's like, it's like playoff records in baseball. Like, every playoff record in baseball is held
right.
by a Yankee.
Because the audience of Survivor reveres the records that have been put out there.
Come on. Survivor is a reality game show about the numbers.
I will
just
say,
like baseball.
Kenner did recount it. He's like, yeah, you know, 80 days. I think I'm done with this. So people do record the number of days they've played. So
and Probst talks about it periodically. Like, there's like a, not even a handful of people who've got 100 days total out there. Although Russell Hance is one of them, and he might have done them all in a calendar year. but actually, no, he might not have. No, he may not have a. How many seasons did he do? Three or four?
Three.
Three?
Three.
Because he might he actually doesn't have 100, because his first season, his third season, he was out too quickly.
Right.
Even though he got like 78 days out of the first two seasons,
right,
which is no small feat.
Well, yeah, going back to back finales is pretty impressive. So.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move forward.
Indeed.
The advantage goes to.
Well, Malcolm wins. This
Malcolm.
Is the
dragon
this
puzzle.
This is the dragon puzzle. Penner gets to not Penner. Scoopin gets to the puzzle, like first, I believe.
And then he tries to put pieces in, like, the frame part.
Yeah, like, he clearly, like, it was...
Like, the part that clearly wasn't dragon.
Yeah.
Where he was jamming
so
pieces.
Strange. He's, like, trying to fit these, like, skinny pieces into, like, the massive cutout. It's like, what are you doing? He's such a dud sometimes.
He is. It's a miracle he really got this far.
Yeah.
To a point.
And then Malcolm, out of nowhere.
Of course.
Of course. Snakes
and Denise is sitting there looking at, like, six pieces, but they were from the hardest part, where, like, this, like, yeah, belly part, where they're, like, they weren't all held to the edge. You know, the edge pieces.
Well, and he, and Malcolm, tricky, like, had a bit of, like, synergy there at the end, because I feel like they were sort of neck and neck, and then he just sort of, like, saw it, and, like, oh, this piece, like, and it just all fell into place for him, right. You know, it was like dominoes
that's
for the
last
six. That's
how it goes with puzzles, though. You get one, all of a sudden it just...
Yeah, things can sort of fall into place. That's so true.
Yeah. Denise goes to Malcolm and tries to read him for what he's thinking for the final, and Malcolm doesn't have the heart to lie to her, so...
Yeah, he pulls a penner.
Yeah.
He pulls an absolute penner.
It was different than a penner, because he already knew. His plan was.
That's true. Penner was just being foolish about not wanting to play the next stage of the game yet, but was willing to entertain the idea. He just didn't want to do it right then.
Right. But Malcolm had made his bed, and he didn't have the heart to lie to her about it.
I felt like he was cocky there, too. I feel like that's what it was. Like, I mean, part of it was, he felt like he had locked up his final three with Scoopin and Blair. But I feel like maybe he was a little bit cocky there. Maybe I was just cocky for him. Because, like, coming out of that win, like, I just couldn't help but think, like, I mean, I wrote it down. I was like, Malcolm can't be stopped. He's going to win. He's going to win the whole thing. Like, out of that reward challenge, it seemed like he was a lock. I mean, he's got this advantage going into the final. The final challenge, like, he can't be stopped.
I don't know. I didn't read it as cockiness. It was just, I thought he didn't want to. I think he's just bad at lying. I mean, I knew he did it to Peter earlier, but I just don't think he's comfortable doing it, especially to Denise, the person he has been.
Well, yeah, Denise can read him a lot better than Pete could,
She makes this great point in confessional. She's like, he carefully planned his final six, carefully planned his final four.
Yeah.
Why doesn't he have this final three plan done? But he did. And it just wasn't her.
Right. So, she did a very good job with that.
Yeah, and she even, like, pleaded. She's like, just tie it up with me and let it go to fire, which is amazing that she was willing to consider that.
And she said, like, what is the... So how does that go, though? Because doesn't the... Why would it go to fire?
That's the tiebreaker. If it goes, the vote is 2-2, then the two people who've gotten the votes go to fire making, and that decides who wins.
Well, and Malcolm wouldn't even have to worry then, unless they were voting out Malcolm.
No, but they weren't. Well, yeah, actually, unless it was his name. Yeah. So there was a season. It was Cook Islands, where Sundra and Becky were in the final four with Yule and.
Oh, yeah. I remember
one
this
one other. And I
thought
watched
there
the
was the,
week.
Like... I thought there was the drawing of the rocks.
Not the final four level, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So what ended up happening is they Jeff shows them the fire building equipment, they get started, and they just fail for an hour. And at the end of the hour, Probst is like, stop. We're going to matches. And they give them... He gives them matches.
I forgot about this. That's right.
And you would think that it was over. They would throw the match on it. The thing would catch on fire. It'd be over. And then next thing you know, in the corner it says, hour and 30 minutes elapsed. And you're like, holy crap. Like, another half an hour has gone by. And, like, the girls have dismantled the little fire towers they had made. And the final and most hilarious part is where Sundra strikes a match. She strikes it. It fizzles out. She looks at Jeff. She holds up the box. She's like, I'm out of matches.
And Probst says, okay, stop. We're going to flamethrowers.
That's the comment. It's like, let's just get them flamethrowers and be done with it. But,
okay, new rule, you can use the sun.
And you know how Jeff enjoys turning the knife. He's just sitting there. He's like,
oh, yeah.
And Sundra has to sit there with nothing to make fire with. And she sat there and watched Becky strike enough matches to get her thing going. And
I'd forgotten about that completely. That's too funny.
It was one of the links in that Survivor recap we were reading. It was just unbelievable to have that happen on day 38.
Yeah, not only are you incapable of making fire, you are incapable of making fire
with matches.
The most assistance you could possibly have, short of actually just being handed a fire.
Right here, just hold the match to the rope. Just hold it there.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Okay, the new challenge is first person to light a match.
Without burning themselves.
You don't even have to get it to the rope. Like, you don't have to keep it lit until you get it to the rope. Just light a match.
Celebrity Jeopardy.
Get the sulfur to burn off. Oh, that's too funny.
All right, so Scoopin' and Lisa make a deal with Denise. They made a deal with Malcolm, so they've got two deals.
Yeah. Well, and then, Blair, and in that deal, it looked like, if I recall correctly, Blair seemed to be more interested in doing the deal with Denise, whereas Scoopin seemed to be more interested in staying true to Malcolm, right?
I don't recall specifically, but maybe.
But at the time when they're talking to Denise, it's very much a, like, all right, we'll just make this deal, and then we'll figure, and then Scoopin' and Blair will figure out which deal they're going to honor later on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was I was impressed with with how Blair handled it. Like, she handled it so much better than Malcolm. And she even said afterwards, like, she intentionally made sure she didn't really commit to anything, and just sort of ahaed her way along.
Right.
You know?
I didn't shake a hand, I gave a hug.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's right. Yeah, I remember that now.
Yeah. And now, the fallen comrades.
The fallen comrades. Everyone, fallen comrades. All right.
Gotta love the fallen comrades. Pay respect to their memory, yes. I actually made notes about a few of the people as we watched them walk through through their little trail of tears or whatever.
I thought there were some notable things only because of the quotes that they selected, which I thought were particularly...
Yeah, I mean, like, the first one that I have a note on is Angie. And the note is you really got to give Malcolm credit for not falling into that trap there. Like, that's such an easy trap to fall into there. Like, A, just, like, being attracted to her or whatever. And then B, like, you know, she was the first person that he seemed to connect with there. And...
That's not true. He connected with Denise very early.
Did he?
Even when he was cuddling Angie... He and Denise connected, yeah.
But I guess what I mean is that, like, it's so... We've seen so many times where it's all about, like, the first connection you make and just, and like, getting a strong bond out of that and sticking to it the whole way through, right. Yada yada. Which, like, it's really, like, it's a false positive in a sense that, like, because Probst talks about it all the time. We've seen how two can control the game and yada. But, like, in reality, people are forming twos all over the place and,
right.
Like... 98% of them are failing.
Right.
Like, the reason that the people who get to the end are always part of strong two is because everybody forms strong two, you know?
Yeah.
It's like those stories they love to do at the Olympics about the story of perseverance and, like, you know, it's like, see, all you have to do is persevere and then you will triumph. But no, we're not seeing the 7,000 other stories of people trying to persevere ending in failure anyway.
Correct. Yeah. Tens of thousands have persevered and... 9,999 failed. So
right, exactly. Right.
Of course, the one prevailed. That's
right.
Defines
but
it.
Nonetheless, credit to Malcolm for not falling into that trap and being savvy enough to identify who would be a good person.
Chris,
for him to go
I thought you were going to talk about CBS cleverly timing her comment about being well-rounded with a shot of her well-roundedness.
No, I. But it was not going there. I didn't realize.
I had to say, that's not my joke. Brian Schrader texted that, and
okay.
I can't really take that.
Is Schrader listening to our podcast these days?
I like to think so.
Okay. I definitely enjoyed, during Dawson's moment in The Fallen Comrades, you know, she talks about the way she uses the phrase, having Jeff snuff my torch.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just... Like, was that a euphemism there? Like... I don't know what that euphemism would be, but it felt like a euphemism. It felt like there was innuendo in the snuff my torch.
People have, you know, sexual connections with a lot of different weird things. They're called fetishes normally, and she has a torch fetish.
Right.
Perhaps the only one in recorded history, but she does.
Right. Uh, I I mean, that doesn't, that's gotta not work out well for people if she's bringing torches into the game.
Yeah. I have, Zane mentioned how the whole tribe folded after he left. I would argue that the two surviving members are very much a testament to the tribe.
Yeah, the whole
folding.
Exactly. The whole tribe did not fold.
No. No, it did
most
not.
Of the tribe folded.
Yeah, if anything, it was trial by fire for Malcolm and Denise, and they were better for it afterwards.
Indeed, indeed. Artis made a good point. I think, in the Fallen Comrade there, about how Tan Dang had it set up for all of them.
Yeah.
And they just couldn't stick together. Like,
yeah,
they
they're not the
it,
first
you know?
Tribe to do that. They won't be the last.
They're not, but, which I guess is also almost sort of like, welcoming to see, you know, after, you know, after the Coach and Ozzy season and the Rob.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
Rob
what we complained about the whole time.
You see these alliances that mm-hmm. just like do refuse to turn on each other and don't play mm-hmm. the second level of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, I think maybe ultimately that's why this season should be held in high regard, is that almost everyone did what was in their best interest, and it wasn't like just appeasing the people in their tribe. It was like, I have to do this because it needs to get me to the end, and that's it.
That's true, yeah. It could have easily been another one along those recipes. Although not really. I mean, like, I think that's, to be honest, that was, I think, we've said this before.
Think about it. Like, Jeff thought he was making moves. Penner thought he was making moves.
Oh, yeah, no. What I mean is...
Pete definitely was making moves. Like, all these people made moves, but they were not there at the end.
Right. But, you know... Like, artists said it was set up for all of them, and they could have eliminated everyone. And you know what I think Tan Dang's downfall ends up being? Is the
not
fact
going
that
to
they never... What's that?
Not going to tribal.
Exactly. Not having at least one tribal council before the merge. And that... to sort of, like, really solidify some things and get them... You know, like I said, you know, alliances don't mean squat until you've actually had to make a vote.
That seems to be the running theme.
Yeah.
Yeah. Denise mentioned in Jeff's Fallen Comrade clip that, man, what a great, great athlete. Man, just...
I know!
Just
so awesome.
A wonderful athlete. Like, he should do that for a living.
Yeah.
He's that
good. That was good. That was gold.
That was gold.
That was gold.
And then Pete confessing that he never liked Abby.
Oh, I mean, did anybody really ever think he did? I don't know.
He seemed very loyal. For not liking her, he sure was loyal to her.
Well, he was loyal because he knew he needed to be. And,
uh-huh.
like, he...
But, like, Russell would trash what's-her-name, like, all the time. The girl who won...
Natalie?
Natalie. He trashed Natalie all the time.
I guess, but, like... But there was a difference. Because the thing is Natalie was a wallflower. And Abby is not a wallflower.
No, she's not.
Like, you trash Abby, and Abby will go Waco on you. As seen by, you know, RC. Like, RC didn't even actually trash her. She just, like, was perceived to have trashed her. And Abby went Waco. So, I mean, I think Pete did the right thing, in a sense, there. I mean, at some point, you know, he was past the point of no return, and, you know...
Yeah.
He's made that bed that he's got, and he's got to just make the best he can with it.
Sleep in it. Don't you got to finish... The analogy.
Yeah, I mean...
You change analogies in midstream.
I know. He's made that bed, and he's going to make lemonade.
There you go.
There we go. That is better. I actually did mix metaphors.
Yes, thank you.
Instead of just...
Thank you.
...tailing off out of a metaphor into regular prose.
Yeah. All right, let's move forward to the immunity challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently this is a repeat of...
Yeah, I remember this.
Fans versus Favorites Micronesia.
Yeah, I didn't remember it specifically from that.
I didn't
remember
it from that either, but
yeah. Yeah. When I saw the ball and you knew it was going to be balancing, I was like, first note I wrote down, last time we had balls balancing in a challenge, it was Scoopin's in a walk.
That's right.
The three balls on the waiter platter there.
There's five.
It wasn't on the platter. It was you had to roll them out.
It was the pizza oven thing.
Yeah, and you had to get them to the six different positions.
Wow, you had an excellent memory, friend.
Yeah, and he torched everybody. I
yes,
mean,
he
Pete
did.
Was like a little bit nipping at his heels.
Smoked everyone.
Only barely.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. I had totally forgotten that. But we found out that Malcolm has an Achilles heel, and this is really interesting.
Right. Right. He was awful. I mean, he was...
Even given two chances...
Yeah.
He could not...
Well, and the thing I noted is the first thing I thought when I saw this is that he would be put, like, one set of blocks behind everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Which that I thought would have been a huge advantage.
It would have.
I
thought the way they did it was a little more forgiving.
Yeah, I thought this was a little less of an advantage to just give mm-hmm. him a reset.
Mm-hmm.
When he drops, like, I feel like he was being a bonehead. Like, he was, like, trying to lift it up higher or something. What are you doing?
I don't know. That's so strange. Too. Like, what's the point of doing that?
Well, and then the worst part is it really seemed like he was okay until he did that, and then once he did that, it really seemed like he was in his head about it. Like, oh my god, I blew this, and we're only into the second round of these lifts here.
So you think if he doesn't try to pull that thing up, then maybe he...
Yeah, if he survives that round, like, I think, you know, if he has the... If he botches it later on, like, it's less in his... You know, it's less of a psychological hit for him.
Who knows? We'll never know.
Maybe. I don't know. Although it sounds like, from what he said afterwards, it sounds like he was in his head before they'd even picked it up for the first time.
Yep. Because he'd seen it on Micronesia, and he already told himself, if that's the challenge, I'm done.
That's so funny that, like, that was the one that, like, he had identified, if this is it, I'm out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the one, this was like, I want to say it might have been Australia. Where they had to hold the bow and arrow, like, with the bow drawn, and then the arrow was in a position such that it had, like, this little piece of, like, tissue paper, like, you know, an inch in front of it in the drawn position, and so you had to hold it until, and if your arrow broke the paper, then you were out.
Wow.
Like, that would have been awesome. Like I love those, because that's the sort of thing where you go for, like, 3 hours. Like, I felt like was not that big a deal. Like,
yeah, I want to see the sun in a different position at the end of a challenge.
I like that analogy, the sun in a different position, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, this was done inside of an hour, maybe a half hour.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, that's just... That's
well,
just
you
weird.
And I have, you more than I, have always been a champion of the... super endurance challenge.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
How bad do you want it?
Especially the last one, because it's like, it's so the, like, poignant, like, metaphor and yet actual, like, part of the game for the game.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. 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 Outlast.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm shocked that in the end, not only is Malcolm not there, but... I did not expect to see, to have it be...
Scoopin' and Lisa.
Of all people, the two were Scoopin' and Lisa. I would never have guessed that. I would have thought for sure you've got at least one, what was their tribe's name, Matt Singh?
Matt Singh, you got it.
Matt Singh. Well, at least one Matt Singh in there.
Yeah.
I
did appreciate that when Malcolm went out, he went out in this nice little explosion of blocks.
Oh yeah, and like the toss of the handle, it, like, straight up in the air was this extra little exclamation point on his ball of fire departure.
Yeah, Jeff totally nailed it. Like, the ball started bouncing. Like, he had the ball bouncing. He was shaking that bad.
Yeah, it's. I don't know. I mean, is it? Like, what's the technique there, do you think? Like,
I thought about doing underhand, but you just don't have as much control. Like, underhanded?
No, yeah, underhanded, that's no good. Because
you have more endurance. You have more endurance, but you don't have control.
Like, I feel like the key is to just apply just a little bit of extra pressure from underneath. Like, because you're going to have natural sag, and so you want to get just a little bit of extra pressure underneath to counter that. So, like, from your thumbs or whatever. But other than that, it's like... And I think the other key, I feel like, is, like, not giving a super squeeze. Like, just being, like, just enough pressure to keep the friction, you know? I'm not saying that's easy.
Like, it's like with golf club, you know? Like, pretend you're holding a bird in your hand.
Right, exactly. Like, you just want to be just loose enough.
Keep it there, but don't kill it.
Right. Yeah. Just enough grip that the club's not going to leave your hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Scoop wins. I actually put a note down that I thought this might be the boost that he needs to give him a final to give him a win at Final Travel.
You know, in discussions leading to the finale, we agreed that he was the outsider, but winning this gave him the concluding paragraph to his story that he didn't have. You know, Denise and Malcolm have the story of surviving, you know, the downfall of Matt Singh. Lisa has the personal story of growing through the game and coming into her own, but, you know, Scoopin needed this to be like, look, I'm a player in this game, and, you know, I played it as hard as I could, which was his story. He's like, I played hard, you know, I had the target on me, but I persisted.
Yeah.
He didn't make enough of the point that he never got a vote. Like, I didn't know that going in.
Yeah, that's pretty nifty.
That is something he should have played.
Yeah, that needed to be played. You know, I wrote down a few notes here saying I feel like there's a case to be made for getting rid of Blair. You know, I think I mentioned this in the past.
Splitting the vote?
The sort of MVP from the same team thing, you know, that Malcolm and Denise could...
Like the greatest show on turf days of Kurt Warner and Marshall Faulk splitting the vote?
Right. I was more thinking of it in baseball. I don't know why, but the thing that I think the hole in that argument is I think there's just not enough votes out there. You know, like with eight votes, like who cares if they split? Like for there to be enough votes going to them that the split matters.
Did you watch The Wire, Chris?
No.
There was a mayoral race for the mayor of Baltimore in that show, and a white candidate uses two black candidates against each other to split the vote of a very heavily black-leaning voting population in order to win the candidacy when everyone said a white mayor couldn't win. Spoiler alert for all of you potential Wire watchers.
Right. Well, and that's a good example of it, because that's the sort of thing where there's just so many votes out there that, like, you know, the sort of percentages you're playing there is like, you know, you really just need like 40% then to win, because if you can get them to really evenly 30-30. Split the 30-30, but with only eight votes out there, like it doesn't make any sense, like, because it only works if you were not going to get a majority anyway. So then that means that you're only getting at best four,
right?
In which case, if you get four, you're still assured a tie. So now you're talking about three, but if you get three, well, that means somebody else is getting three.
Three,
of those.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So the splitting doesn't really it doesn't help. Like, you have to have at least 10 votes, I think, for that to make sense, so you can actually do a 4-3-3.
So the case for Lisa does not
vote out Lisa. Yeah, it's not there. I think.
Yeah. The only question: Lisa was totally pro Malcolm, and Scoopin was at the point of trying to decide if he wanted the honor of beating the best in Malcolm, or if he just wanted to try to give himself the best shot.
How do you feel about that? I mean, I
think it's different with the final three. It's different with the final three because of the fact that you do have two other people to beat. If it's two player head to head, like, you know, that's what happened season one, and it blew up in her face. Kelly Wigglesworth had her choice of Richard Hatch or the other guy, and she chose Richard Hatch. When she probably would have rolled the other guy.
Yeah.
So there was, we've already seen that come up a few times. But what was your poker analogy?
Well, it was an analogy. I just wanted to ask you, like, how do you feel about that honor card, playing that honor card there? Like, is voting out, like, the most deserving player, like, is that like shooting an angle in poker? Like, are you picking up edge where you, like, you shouldn't be trying to pick up edge?
I don't know the term shooting an angle. I'm not sure.
Never heard of shooting an angle is like is doing something that is like very gray as to whether or not it's against the rules. Like, for example, when you make a four card, when you've only got you got an up and down straight draw, you miss on the river, and you expose your hand
you
and say,
got
I got a
straight.
And say, I got a straight. Like, oh, gosh, I didn't even realize I didn't have a straight. And then and maybe the other guy will accidentally will muck his hand because he thinks, oh, I've lost. Or, like, just trying to, or literally shooting an angle by, like, trying to catch a glimpse of a player's cards. You know, when they fold or whatever, just to, like, just to get more information.
So were you saying that he's shooting an angle?
No, I mean, it was the best, it was the best, that was the best, like, analogy I could come up with from poker, but I still just wanted to, you know, like,
there aren't too
there...
many other cases in life where you can, like, choose who your opponent
choose your
is
opponent.
Going to be. Yeah.
It's true.
So, the only thing you could draw it to is maybe boxing.
Oh, that Mayweather?
Well, yeah, that's part of it, but I was thinking specifically of him, but in boxing you can choose your next fight, or to a degree you can choose your next fight. So,
right.
There's the honor of facing the guy who's being challenged as being touted as the you know, pound-for-pound champion with you in Pacquiao,
yeah.
Or just continuing to avoid him and coming up with reasons why you shouldn't fight him. So,
right. Well, I guess what the question really is then is, like, if he decides to keep Malcolm and vote out Denise, not that it's really any different, because they both, you know, everybody knows that they both were major favorites going into the final tribal council.
Right.
But let's say it was more of a marginal person, like another Scoopin type or something like that.
Another Scoopin type?
Yeah. Like, Scoopin's he's marginal as a finalist, right? Like, there are finalists, there are final threes where if you put him in there, he could very easily win, and there are final threes where you put him in and he doesn't really have much of a chance, right?
Right.
A very mediocre final player.
Right.
Not mediocre overall, but just mediocre amongst finalists. Like, is he just an idiot if he decides to go the honor route and bring Malcolm with him? Is he just a moron for not just getting rid of him? Or, like,
I think in hindsight, it didn't matter. You know,
well,
ultimately...
Yes. Yeah, I'm saying much more hypothetically.
Hypothetically, like, no. Because it's not like Denise is completely unworthy of being there. You know what I'm saying? It's not like the jury would view her as being less of a...
No, that's what I'm saying, though. Let's say Denise isn't the alternative. Let's say it's another Scoopin type in Denise's spot.
Oh.
So let's pick another player that's not Scoopin. Let's pick, like...
Artis.
Yeah, Pete or Jeff Kent or something like that.
Okay.
Or Artis. It doesn't really matter.
Okay.
I mean, actually, Artis I feel like is not great because...
He's lesser...
Well, and also because he's actual, like, he was legit part of Tandang, and not even in the flip floppy Tandang, so he'd probably take a lot of votes at the final tribal council.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Kent is probably, or Carter. Actually, Carter I think is a good example there. Say it's Blair, Scoopin, Carter, and Malcolm in the final four. Scoopin wins immunity. He's kind of in the driver's seat in terms of picking who's going to go home.
Yeah, you send Malcolm home. I don't even see the value.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, is it just stupid to not send Malcolm home?
Yes.
You're just playing.
Yeah.
You're
inviting them, because then what can Malcolm say at the end is like, look, I talked him into keeping me. Like, you know, like that in itself is award worthy. You know.
Right. Okay.
All right. So skip to the last tribal council. Jeff is inquiring about alliances and. Denise makes a point about how she feels like her and Malcolm were separated at birth, and, you know, however many years later they've been reunited on this island in a Lost style story of reuniting on an island.
Yeah. You know what? There was one other thing I wanted to ask about. Sorry, this is from the second to last tribal council, from the one where Malcolm gets voted out.
Right.
There was a question. Sorry, I was reading through my notes here and couldn't remember which part this was with. There was a question I think asked of Blair, you know, or Blair and Scoop maybe, or I forget how it came about, but there was something that sort of made it sound like they sort of mentioned that Blair and Scoop didn't always vote together,
right?
Despite the fact that they were basically in an alliance all along. And I wonder, the question I wrote down was, did their willingness to not have to vote together all the time actually make their alliance stronger?
I think it just, there was no expectation there. Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
They had mutual interest, but there was no expectation and therefore no feeling of betrayal when things weren't voting together. And
right.
They used the term open relationship. Like, they have an open
alliance. And,
and that's an excellent way to call it what they had. It's like, clearly we have a mutual interest. Clearly we could work together, but at the same time, we're both exploring options.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say is, like, I feel like this is sort of an interesting approach to an alliance. I feel like it makes it stronger because there's no hurt feelings or, like, feeling like you're on the bottom. You know, you are the follower versus the other is the leader if you're always voting together. Because sooner or later, there's going to be a vote where, if you're always voting together, one of you is voting differently than you would have voted independently.
Yeah.
And it sort of made me, like, question the definition of an alliance. Like, is an alliance, like, we vote together? Or is an alliance just
we plan together?
or better yet, just simply, like, we're not going to go after each other, you know? And I feel like that's the recipe. Maybe that's the better new alliance. It's like, we just won't go after each other versus, like, we have to always work together.
Yeah, the requirement of needing someone to trust, though, kind of demands that you, you know, have someone else. I mean, Scoopin was always sort of finding himself in the free agent center of things.
Yeah.
And Lisa had different alliances with Malcolm, alliances with Penner, alliances with Pete. Like,
right.
She very much shifted depending on where she felt her best chances were. And then
right.
Ultimately, I think she lost respect in my book in that case. She was very wishy-washy about things. So.
That's true, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And then Malcolm made some mention about deals that goes beyond everyone.
This doesn't work for everyone. That was a weird comment.
Yeah.
A very weird comment. And it never got play. Like, Jeff was like, what the hell do you mean? He never said,
what does that mean?
What does that mean?
Cut?
Right. Right.
The only thing I thought about that is I was like, is that, I thought maybe it was like a last ditch attempt. Because I think that came right after Blair refused to, like, basically didn't answer when Probst asked if there was any reason to keep Malcolm around.
She paused a long time.
Then she said, no, there isn't a reason.
Right. She said, there's not a reason for me to take Malcolm to the end. That's
right.
What she said.
And Malcolm, like, Malcolm's stomach falls somewhere beneath his feet.
Mm-hmm.
And then he drops his, like, deals that go beyond this game. And I felt like it was a last ditch attempt to play the loyalty card that the old Blair would have succumbed to in a heartbeat.
The Church Blair, not the Survivor Blair.
Right, yeah, but that doesn't work anymore since Justice visited.
Stupid Justice.
Brother. I still enjoyed seeing that the recap of that with him running out. Sister! Sister! So strange. I don't know why I find that so strange.
I don't know either. I did note that Malcolm looked genuinely sad that he had to write Denise's name down.
Well, I was wondering though. I put a note about that too. I said, is he tearing up about having to vote out Denise?
Or that he's the only one writing Denise.
Because he knows it's him. Because he's like, the writing, could not have been more clear on the wall after Blair's non-answer.
Yeah. Definitely possible.
The pain on his face during that vote, and when the final vote was read, and you didn't even need the final vote to be read because once he got two, you know he's getting three.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was so hard to watch. Like a little part of me died watching that. I feel like, you know, and I was wondering, like, did everybody feel that, or is it just me because he was my horse? And was he my horse? I can't remember. Who knows?
You picked one of them, Malcolm. So I commend you for that. Given the odds that were stacked against them,
right?
I commend you for that. But because we picked after the second episode when they were already down two.
Yeah, they were already down two.
Right.
Well,
that
was
when
two
we
to
picked
none to
because
none.
We didn't pod the first one.
Yeah.
Did
we even pick that episode, or did we pick our second podcast, which would actually be the third episode?
That might be possible. That might be possible. opinion.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Who knows? But,
did you feel that way for him? Like, when he went out, did you feel, like, a little bit of, like, sink?
Not as badly, because the people who were left were not the most undeserving people. Does that make sense?
Oh,
like,
okay.
They had stories that could stand up at tribal council. Like, when you watched people go and, like, Philip stayed around, and you watched people go and Natalie stayed around, but, you know, you understood, like, it's different.
The only
thing to compare it to is when Terry Dietz got voted out. Like, that, like, you genuinely, like...
Yeah, wow, that's actually, like, what came to mind, actually.
This guy, like, has every reason to have the belt, and he's not going to.
Yeah. He was one immunity shy, and I don't mean the final immunity, but just in general, like, I feel like if Malcolm had won one other immunity, like, he'd be completely in Terry Dietz
territory. Oh, I see what you're saying, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I don't know if the numbers exactly match.
Yeah,
up.
Malcolm's game was more social, and Terry's was completely physical.
Right. But yeah, like I said, it was,
You're still recovering.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, it was, I took it, like, I felt like I got punched in the stomach when he got voted out. Like, I just, especially after the way the episode started, because I was just convinced when he won
that reward challenge
with the advantage, I was like,
he's not even at Ozzy's level. He's not at that level.
What do you mean?
Of winning, dominating challenges. So I knew there was a chance he could lose that final immunity challenge, and I didn't think they would hesitate to send him home.
Was Ozzy really that much of a challenge dominator, though?
Yes. He went back to Redemption knowing he could win his way back, and he did.
That's true. Well, that's different. That's one-on-one challenges.
Maybe.
That's not the same as winning immunity challenges up against
dominant.
Five people.
That guy's a stud. So,
I mean, he's a beast, but... And it's funny you compare him to Ozzy, because Stacy made the same comparison when we were watching, that she felt like he was... that Malcolm was the same as Ozzy in that, like, he just couldn't win, and he can't win in the end. Although, did Ozzy make the final tribal council?
No.
He didn't. He got voted out. Oh, that's right, because it was Albert, Coach, and Sophie in the final.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ozzy was real sad, just like Malcolm was when he got voted out.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, I guess I felt it a little bit when Ozzy went home that time, too. So, yeah, I guess that is an apt comparison.
My next note is, oldest final three ever, ?
You might be right. That's a good question.
They're all 35 plus, right?
At least.
Yeah, might be 40 plus all.
Yeah, I mean, well, here, I've got the...
Internet.
Yeah, I've got it up. All 41 plus. Denise is 41.
Yeah, she was the young one.
Blair's 49, Scoop is 50.
Wow.
Yeah. That means, I mean, he was old when he did the first.
That has to be the oldest final three ever. Maybe not in combined years, because Bob is so old, but...
final three versus final twos.
Yeah.
But, in terms of average age of the final tribal council, probably, I mean, that's...
Yeah. And
that's an average. Yeah, that's an average age right there of 46 and change.
You know, when we look for horses, we don't think of the over 40 crowd when we consider our horses, just because, and we saw it with Lisa, they get on the outs kind of early because of all the young people around. You know, it's hard to be on the in when you're at that age.
Yeah,
and
I would agree with that.
You know, Malcolm made his partnership with Denise, and that obviously is key for her. And Lisa fell
was
in.
Was it, though? I don't even know that it was. I mean, it was maybe in terms of surviving their tribe.
And especially the post-merge dynamic, you know, because of the relationship they had already had. Like, they had some...
But I think... I don't know. I think if she... Because the thing is if I recall correctly, when they were at their final three vote from that tribe, her, Malcolm, and Russell... Russell was ready to get rid of Malcolm. And so, you know, I think if it's Russell and her that comes out of it, you know, if Russell makes it to the merge, I think they're still, you know, I think it's the same situation for her. Maybe not, because Russell's not nearly
He's not nearly as good at dealing with everyone as Malcolm
That's
is.
True. That's true.
Not a little bit. Yeah. The guy was a mess.
Yeah.
All right. We got Lisa.
Did you see the post-season stuff with him?
No.
Oh, wow. He, like, apparently he, like, is not, like, it's just not cool with everybody from the season. Like, in particular, Denise, for some reason, I think because he felt like she snaked him in that vote where he ended up going home.
So what?
And he just had having a real hard time dealing with all of it, apparently. I found a podcast, you know, there was a mention of it a few times in articles online by our boy Dalton Ross. And, he links to the podcast that he did with Russell when he got voted out, back in like October. And, like, Russell basically doesn't even talk about the show at all, and is basically just, like, he's dealing with some major, like...
Sour grapes.
It's not even sour grapes, like, I mean, you know, Malcolm sort of alludes to it in early in the season about how it seems like he's got a bit of a god complex, feels like if he wants it and wills it, then it'll happen for himself. And that's why he had all those sort of breakdowns after challenges. But he just, like, he's just having major issues. And apparently, like, when Malcolm approached him at the reunion, when he first approached him at the reunion, Russell, like, walked away. Like, he eventually came back and, like, they shook hands and, like, that was it. But, like, he, like, literally walked away from him at the beginning because he just didn't, like, couldn't deal with it or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. People have their own personal feelings about the game, and to some degree, this is a very personal game and it reflects on you, you know, as much as any game does because of those partnerships that you make and the trust you have to put in there, so.
Yeah. I mean, what he talked about, he said, it sounds like it had a lot to do with his kids, I don't know how many kids he has, but, like, that was a big factor in it. And Dalton sort of acknowledged that, saying that, like, he's having kids himself, like, that's sort of one reason why he wouldn't actually go out there, even though otherwise, as a super fan of the show, like, he would totally go out there if he got the invite.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, just being completely exposed like that and having to deal with that with your kids and how that all plays out, he just felt like that would be too awkward to try to navigate. So you're right. I'm looking back over all these seasons here. I'm already back to Palau, and every one of them, like, average age is like low 30s.
Mm-hmm.
The Crowley.
Usually it's the people in that range that do the best. The people in, like, the 27 to 33 range, because, like,
right,
they have enough athletic skill to hang,
yeah,
and they have enough maturity to navigate.
Exactly.
People.
Yeah, you're not like a young punk that's, like, just thinks you can do anything you want. Like, you've got at least enough humility to be able to navigate. Yeah, the one that gets close is Survivor Gabon, which was Sugar, who was 29, Susie, the fishmonger you previously mentioned, was 47, and then Bob Crowley was 57. So, overall,
Bob
that puts
only
the
57?
Average. Yeah, that
That's
puts
only
the average
more than Scoopin.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But that puts the average for that final three at about 43-ish, off the top of my head, maybe 44.
But this one's beat that.
But this one beats that by about 2 years in average age.
All right, so let's move on to the final tribal council.
Yep.
Denise has her opening statement first. She says, "No apologies. I deserve to be here. I assimilated into three different tribes, and I had to prove my value every time in order to be kept around." And that, I think, says as much as anything, because coming in, especially as a minority, into some of these tribes,
mm-hmm.
You have to find the reason for people to not vote you out, as much as find someone else
and
to vote out.
She did a decent job owning her actions. I felt like she was a bit brash, but ultimately owning her actions.
Mm-hmm.
And
Lisa's statement was about how her way was different, but not less than what others did, that she made mistakes, and after meeting with her brother, Justice, that she decided that she couldn't not throw punches.
Yeah. Yeah, I think she made a real good story about it. You know, she didn't have a lot to work with, but what she did have, she did really well with.
She has the growth arc of the season,
which is not the sexiest cell at Final Tribal, but
it
works.
There are people who have won based on the growth arc. Like, I feel like, what's his name? Fabio. Fabio had a very good growth arc that people latched onto. I mean, aside from being a good guy, like, he definitely.
But he was just,
all the evils.
He was just so likable. Mm. It was what it was. I feel like.
Yeah.
Who was he up against? He was up against, Chase and Sash. Sash was just slimy.
Ooh, Sash.
Sash just felt completely slimy and got no votes.
Yeah, he was.
And Fabio only beat Chase by one vote, 5-4.
Ah.
Chase was that, like, country singer, like, beefcake, who probably, you know, probably was in a catch-22 because he had to off Holly in the final vote out, who was totally tight with him, although she still voted for him in that final tribal council. Right. But if he brought her, I think she ends up winning. And maybe people didn't vote for him because they saw what he did to Holly.
Did we podcast that season?
No, we did not. I think was this the season just before? This was the season before we started podcasting. This was right before Redemption. Thank goodness too, because that would have been enough to put us out of commission. I wouldn't have wanted to pod after that. Redemption Island at least had a little bit going on, as bad as it was.
All right.
And then finally, Scoopin.
Shorter than the other ones, right?
Shorter. I put a question in before I even started. Would he out Blair for her TV past?
Which, yeah, we need to talk
about
that.
But I wondered if he would do it. I thought his story was awful, though.
We can talk about it now. There's no reason not to talk about it now. Like, okay. You know, did it change how people voted?
I doubt it.
Yeah, I doubt it.
I really doubt it.
It didn't seem like anyone cared. Like,
and it also just seemed really odd that Penner was the one bringing it up. Like, I could see Scoopin playing the card. But
in post-show comments, Jeff admitted that he fumbled that one. That he should have put Penner on the spot for doing that when he had no need to.
Yeah, yeah. Probst even said he had it in like highlighted note on his card, and he forgot to get to it.
Yeah, I don't know how.
Scoopin, his was weird. I mean, this, like, he tried to play the Returner versus the World card, and I don't think that was really that good. I mean,
well, the thing is, he says the target was on his back, but I think people realize quickly this guy is not as big a threat as we thought he was, and they kind of, like, you know, they
right.
set him aside.
Yeah, he
like,
wasn't
okay.
like Penner in his mm-hmm. scheming.
Right.
And I mean,
it wasn't like
you can't play the Returner versus the World. Like, I mean, I guess this is why he didn't play the like nobody ever voted for me card, because you certainly can't play both the nobody ever voted for me
and
at the same time say I was a Returner when nobody wants a Returner to win.
Yeah.
But I you know, if you had six Jeff Kents on the jury, then maybe that card was the Returner versus the World card was good to play. Because, like, there's, you know, Kent can't deny that was what he was trying to do. But, yeah, I felt like Scoopin was just really weak in his opening and in his
I don't know that either of us expected him to be a verbal powerhouse in the final three.
Yes.
So.
Agree.
Yeah.
Agree.
Artist comes up for his moment and he just uses it to
he was
be
so
bitter.
Why was he bitter? Like, I guess I could see him being bitter because, like, Scoopin wandered on him, but, like, Scoopin was the guy that, like, didn't Scoopin and Artist, like, literally never exchange words directly?
Yeah, they had him on the out from the get-go, so you can't talk about that.
Like, I don't know, Karma is a bitch? That's all you got, Artist? Come on.
Well, that was him saying, I'm throwing my vote at the people who did not stab me in the back. That was what that was.
I mean, yeah, but I don't know. It just, ugh.
Yeah. It's everything
amazing
we hate.
To me that
it's we
amazing
hate.
To me that he was this bitter, considering A, how long he'd been at Ponderosa and thus had time to get over it, and B,
he seemed pretty nice at Ponderosa too. He seemed pleasant.
Yeah, well, you know, he just throws on those massive headphones and just sort of chills out and hopes he gets to watch a movie of his own choice at some point once RC. Lets him into the clubhouse. So who's Carter was next, right?
Uh-huh, yep. It was just... it was weird just because he kind of reverted to this little boy who just needed to be held. Like...
Yeah.
He's like, Scoopin, you know, what were you thinking when you found out I was going home? And Scoopin handled it well.
Scoopin well laid it on super thick. It felt really thick, but Carter probably ate up every
he
bite
did.
Of it.
He did, because he's a boy and he needed to be held.
Carter just feels like a simpleton.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to get like... I don't know, he just doesn't seem like he could find his way out of a paper bag to me. I don't know why, but he just...
No, he brought nothing to the game. There's nothing to say. Let's stop wasting time on him.
Actually, you know what's funny is that podcast that I went back and listened to from Dalton Ross that had Russell Swan on it. Dalton and his co-host, I don't even know who it is, some woman, they were talking about Carter like the exact same way we were. Like, there's a scene where there's this guy Carter in the water, and I didn't even know there was a Carter on the show.
Yeah, there is so a Carter funny. On the show, but he didn't really do anything with that.
And this is, of course, after 4 episodes of the show, because Russell's been voted out. Like, that was funny. That was good stuff.
Yeah, that was a mess.
Who's next?
Next, we have Peter.
Yep. Is
basically,
it Peter or Pete?
Pete, I don't know. He called Lisa Judas for betraying the group, but then I don't really get the analogy.
The only thing I wrote down is that Denise, I felt like Denise, I mean, obviously we ultimately find out that Denise had it all in the bag all along, but I felt like Denise didn't sell hard enough here. I don't know exactly what she was putting, what this context was, but I felt like she should have, the discussion ended up being about getting rid of RC and Tandang kind of folding a little bit there, and I feel like she should have sold that a little bit harder, you know, just being like, you guys screwed up when you got rid of RC, you know, if you'd kept RC.
But there's no point in turning that knife. I don't know what the point in that is. Oh, just to throw the shade
on the
Lisa
context.
Scoopin?
What's that?
Is it just to throw shade on Lisa and Scoopin? Is that the only reason to talk about that?
I guess. And also, like, I don't know. I don't remember the context well enough now. We're too far away from this.
Next to RC, we get her horrible laugh, which is completely
and
unnecessary.
What was her question? I don't even know what it was. I just wrote down that it was a waste of a question, but at least she wasn't bitter.
I don't know. I didn't record that she had a question. She just pointed out that Lisa was a threat on the boat and that Scoopin...
Oh, that's right, yeah.
That Scoopin... she was mad at Scoopin for not telling her when she was going home. That's what her question was about.
But... RC, like, it's funny because it seemed early on like she was going to be good. And maybe she would have been if not for
Peter.
Pete being a step ahead of her.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, this all this talk about like I knew Blair was going to make it to the end. And I spotted her on the boat. Like, is she trying to? Is she like?
It's
is this
revisionist history. Yes, we have.
Is it revisionist history, and she's trying to make it sound like she knew all along?
It's her trying to make herself look better. I don't know.
You think that's what it is? Okay.
Yeah.
Because, like, because it's baloney. Because that's the funny thing. I mean, and not baloney because I don't think it's true. Like, if it's true, then like, you're just an idiot. Because, like, she only got there because, like, she got there out of... Lisa got there out of luck, not out of skill. Not because she was great.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I don't know. Next up is Malcolm.
Yeah. Malcolm's the one who I always give a pass on bitterness. You know, that's such a, I mean, not him personally, but the, like that
yeah,
position.
Yeah, that position, right.
Like,
yeah.
It's such a tough spot. Like, you literally are 24 hours post-vote out.
Right.
Like, it's still bitter. I mean, the taste has still got to be there in your mouth, and I think you get a pass. And he seemed a little bit. He wasn't even remotely as bitter as Artis was, but he did get a little bit snarky.
Yeah, and he said that Lisa was talking the right things, and he asked Denise why he was being appeasing to everyone, and he hated that.
Yeah. The thing I hated is I felt like he asked a question that essentially was asking her to repeat her opening statement,
yeah.
Which I thought was
right.
I'm not mistaken, Pete asked the question as well.
Correct.
That was basically the
yes.
same.
And that was my notes reflect that the points she made were literally only brought as the question didn't challenge her to go outside of what she'd already said.
Right. Although the thing I did notice here is that he catches her at the end and is kind of like, you're not answering the question. And the thing that I do think is kind of right about it is he keeps is a lot of what she was saying. She was doing a lot of explaining of why she's sitting in the final three, and that's irrelevant at this point. You know, it's not why are you there. It's why are you there, and why are you a better person to vote for than the other two people who also can make the statement, I'm here and you're not.
She got him, I think he got her to clarify, and her point was that she did not, that they were not playing strategy to get there, and I think Penner ultimately
right, yeah, eventually she got
that.
There, yeah.
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 She did play the I'm sitting here and you're standing there.
Yes!
Which...
Yes! I wrote that. I was so thrilled when she said it. I mean, she almost said it the way I would have said it. You know,
uh-huh.
She almost used the line from
uh-huh.
The Rock verbatim.
Uh-huh.
We're up here.
You're down there.
Uh-huh. You walked into the wrong goddamn room. I love that line. And every time we even get close to it, I will quote the line verbatim. Even though by now everybody who's listening to this podcast definitely knows
right.
that line.
I did tell you about the time I played poker with the guy who said, and I take pleasure in gutting you, boy, right?
Oh, yeah, I think you did tell me.
Of course
I think,
did.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah,
it's poker-related, and it's related to The Rock, which means you're doubly invested. So.
Exactly. It's this teenage angst. I'm angry at my mother. That's the line that comes afterwards.
Yeah, no, Nicolas Cage. I got it. Yeah, I got it.
Yeah.
Move on to Jeff Kent.
I take pleasure in gutting.
He shares that everyone has bitterness and that he acknowledges that, and I appreciate it. He gives his three-person theory, which is people that make stuff happen, people that watch stuff happen, and people that wonder what the hell just happened.
Right, yeah, that was... It's an enjoyable trichotomy.
It's a very Texas way of life, I feel like. That seems like the perfect Texas thing. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Making it happen, watching it happen, or wondering what the hell... happened.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he does a good job of patting himself on the back about handling his bitterness. And then, I mean, the thing I hate about those is it's such a setup question. He so clearly is asking Scoopin this question because he believes that Scoopin is a what-the-hell-just-happened guy.
Right.
Right. You know, like,
yeah.
And in general,
yeah.
Those bug me. Like,
yeah.
Give me another trichotomy where...
How about you just say, look, I think you just got... You're here because you're... You were just not ever considered to be a problem.
You found a pretty solid way to mask your bitterness, but we still found it.
Right. And he tries to get Lisa to explain how she didn't float by to get to the end.
Yeah.
And then she gives an example where she did float by, and he calls her out on it. And...
Yeah. She didn't turn it back on him well enough there. I mean, because the counter-argument, and I was ready with it when it happened, and she sadly didn't go there, is the counter-argument is, you know, yes, you need to make things happen, but, like, there is a balance to this game, and everybody knows that when you try too hard to make things happen, that's when things will blow up in your face, and you need to be able to read the writing on the wall of, like, you know, you try to make things happen, but if things are going against you... You need to know when to push and when not to push, and that was a moment not to push.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't really articulate that very well. And Scoopin needed to own that he went after Jeff because Jeff was targeting returners. If he did that, he might have won himself another vote.
That's not bad.
Maybe not. I don't know.
But I was trying to explain to Jonas who Brenda was, because she's one of the returning players for next season. Yes, we're getting ahead of ourselves. But the point I made with her was that she played too hard. Like, it was too overt what she was doing to control the tribe and who was coming in, coming out. And everyone just decided that she wasn't going to do that. And then she was voted out. So.
Wait, who?
Brenda, the Miami cheerleader.
Oh, yeah.
It was, what's his name season?
Yeah, it was Fabio. The Sash Judd season. Yeah.
And it was her and Sash, but it was mostly her running things. And
right, yeah. And then she was gonna, when she was going to get voted out, she was like, well, if you scramble, then you look weak.
Which is a popular girl thing to say, you know?
Yeah, and it's so stupid because it's like, yeah, but except you know what looks weaker? Actually being voted out.
Being voted out, getting stuffed.
That's weaker.
Yeah. All right.
I think I'd rather look weak and be there than not look weak and be sitting on the jury.
Yeah. To some, I mean, no one ever gets to the final three without compromise, except for maybe like
right, Boston exactly.
Rock.
Yeah, and you have to be able to identify those spots.
Right. All right. So Abby comes up and she asks, "Why do they deserve her vote?" And
yeah. Blair gave a decent answer. I don't remember what it was, but she gave a decent answer.
She says, "I wanted to stay, but it fell apart, and it was very diplomatic." And then
yeah.
Michael says, "I deserve your vote."
He floundered. He was awful.
Well, here's the thing. It was a great little, you know, back and forth, because he says, "No one did outwit, outplay, outlast like me." And Abby said, "It's not out disrespect." And I was like, oh, snap. It was like very, like,
yeah.
Throw
and
it
he
back
was like,
at you.
You're right, it's not.
Yeah. I guess that was bad. I don't know.
Yeah.
And Denise apparently said enough to earn her vote, which I think is so far away from what I would have expected. I didn't see how in the world Abby could possibly throw a vote at Denise.
Yeah, because she was... Well, that might have been a lesser of evils thing with Abby. Maybe, you know, because Abby might have felt like Scoopin' and Blair owed her something, whereas Denise did not. Even though Denise's transgressions against her are arguably much
more
personable.
In tribal, much worse. Yeah, much worse.
Oh yeah, she was. She got way more personal with Abby than
she,
Scoopin'
yeah,
and
she's
Blair
like,
ever
if
did.
If that's our culture, you suck. Like that's
yeah, right.
That was her line. I don't know.
Yeah.
The dessert course.
Yeah, Denise did a good job of owning her actions.
We're
again
at the dessert
there.
Course, Chris. Jonathan Penner.
Why was Denise a bitch? I didn't understand that.
I didn't get it either. Her comments to Abby is what he was calling out.
That's true. I mean, yeah, that's true. I mean, I definitely felt like going into this that Denise may have burned a lot of the capital she had built up to make her such a threat at a final tribal, just because she's the person that apparently Probst always goes to when it's time to hate on Abby.
She's a little too honest and forthcoming with her responses.
Yeah.
To Michael, he says, "My name was written down 15 times. Your name was written down 0 times. That may continue."
Yeah.
That was awesome. Because
that was a great
line. Scoop
was
like, "Hey, this guy's talking me up. This is going to be really great." And he's like, "That's going to continue." He's like, "Oh, in your face."
So why does Penner out Blair? Is it just because he wants to just make absolutely sure that Denise wins? Because Denise was clearly the winner. I mean, I saw a thing later on that where Penner said, like, you know, "I gave Denise a hard time. I kind of wanted, but she was never, she was always getting my vote."
Hmm.
You know, did he out Blair just to try to make it, because he felt like, you know, Blair may be making a decent enough case. I don't know how these people are going to vote. Like, I should out her so that there's, you know, there's not as much sympathy for her.
I think maybe it was the point where he's like, I want to get all the cards on the table and let everyone make up their own mind. You know, that.
Yeah.
He seems like he could be one of those guys where it's like.
To be honest, I think this is just the producer in him. you know, the movie producer, or TV
right,
producer,
yeah.
Whatever he is, in him just like wanting
the
to
flair
make a
for
great
the dramatic.
Show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see that.
You got to give Blair credit, though. She fired back so perfectly at him. And, you know, I don't recall hearing about your first job when you were a teenager.
Tell me what you
whatever.
Did from 12 to 21, you know?
Exactly. Like, that was that was the perfect rebuttal. Like, I am who I am completely truthful to who I am. I didn't talk about who I was then, but I didn't hear a lot of other people who are in the, you know, 40 and up range talking about their life when they were a teenager.
Yeah. I certainly won't be. I can tell you that much. And then he goes for the grand analogy at the end. He says that one of you rode the other two in here. You were in the chariot, and the other two were the oxen, although it's a mixed metaphor. It really should be
that
horses.
That's a great line, though.
Well, here's the thing. And I know you didn't watch Borneo, but the snake and the rat.
The snake and the rat,
that's
yeah.
That's history. Like, you're not topping that.
Yeah, but that was pretty good. It was still pretty good. I mean, it took me a second shot to even understand what the heck he was saying.
You know what would ruin my life, Chris? Not my life, but, like, if I find out that, like, the producers planted that on her, which is totally possible, because Susan was not the most educated person.
Oh, the snake and the rat.
Yeah, but she delivered it well, and I hope that's evidence of it being genuine.
Yeah, that's true. She's not really that much of a wordsmith.
No, she's like,
although
a
she
very
had time. I mean,
collar.
She had time to prepare for that, and like everything else that you think of when you hear her speaking is just her in confessional, where she's just sort of like rambling or whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas that's like the question she spent. I don't know when was she voted out. Was she fourth place, fifth place, something like
no,
that?
No, she wasn't that close to the end. I don't recall.
I have here. I got
it
up
open.
Here.
Susan Hawk.
She was fourth place.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
the most bitter. Oh no, third place would have been the most bitter.
Yeah. By the way, had Kelly place? Wigglesworth not brought Richard Hatch to the final, that definitely is the oldest average age. Final, because Rudy was 72.
Oh, Rudy. Ugh.
Yeah. Or I assume these ages are the ages at the time that they played, not current.
Rudy was really old. Although he could have been in the 60s then, maybe. I don't know.
It must not be current, because Kelly, it says 22, and Kelly is not currently 22.
Correct, yeah. She would have been 10.
Right. So yeah, that would have made for a 47-year-old final travel.
I don't know Rudy was that old.
Age in the final travel.
No idea Rudy was that old.
With neither contestant anywhere near 47 years old. RC's vote gets displayed as she's making it. She says something about, like, clever girl. See, this is the thing that makes me think this is not revisionist history, but she actually believes... Like, she actually did think this from the beginning and still believes that, like, she was the cleverest one out there. Because she actually voted for her. You know?
I don't know.
It'd be one thing to just be saying it
I think less of her now than I did before this, so it's unfortunate.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I completely agree.
You see Penner say that she played flawless, and Carter, of course, is like, hey, bro, you were a good dude. Like, come on. I mean, since when do we vote based on who's a good dude? It's Survivor, not good dude.
Sadly they don't have them sign some like voting criteria.
But that's the game. But that's the game.
That's
you
the
never...
game, and that's the thing. That's the one part of the game I have so much trouble reconciling is the fact that you have to play to your jury, and your jury gets to make their vote based on whatever they want.
Right. It's their call. You don't have any control over that. So,
indeed.
Yes, I don't know. All right. So Jeff does not take any rickshaws or.
You're totally stealing. You're stealing from Dalton Ross here because he loves to go off on him for not using extreme means of travel to get the votes back to New York or Studio City or wherever they are.
Yeah. Well, it was always so campy, but I think they should just stick with the campy and like have him do like. Really bizarre things to like get back there, like he misses his flight. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, they should Photoshop him into the Felix Baumgartner skydive.
Nice.
From whatever it was, 24 miles up or whatever.
Yeah, the upper edges of the ionosphere.
I'm glad you got it with the. I'm glad you got the reference just off the Felix
Baumgartner. That name was like it was the hot thing for a weekend. Like you couldn't go anywhere without hearing it.
How sad is that? How sad is that? By the way, like you skydive from like outside the Earth's atmosphere, and you are the thing for 3 days. That's it.
That's the world we're in, Chris.
What's that?
That's the world we're in.
I guess. I mean,
on to the next.
What have you done for me lately?
On to the next.
You didn't skydive again this week, so sorry, you're yesterday's news.
All right, so Denise gets every vote except for the two that we saw.
Right.
And is a deserving winner. Survived every single tribal council. You know, that's
yeah. Did you see? So you know, obviously, in the reunion, Probst does his usual polling of like, would you have voted for Malcolm over Denise?
Mm-hmm.
Which A was the stupid question because that's clearly not what the choice was,
mm-hmm.
right? Like,
right.
It was either going to be Denise and the two losers, mm-hmm. or Malcolm and the two losers.
Right? Yeah. Right.
Jeff
was on his game. He did not have a good night.
Yeah.
Did not have a good night.
Like
there were, I don't have a lot of notes from the reunion show just because he did not ask the questions that I thought would be the most.
No, yeah. Although he did, I did do a checklist, and he did act. Every single person did say something in the
right, but that's not the point of the reunion show.
Albeit the like Russell Swan talking about, yep, it rained a lot out there.
Right. That's not the point of the reunion show. The point of the reunion show is to get the answers to the questions that we couldn't ask overtly during the game.
Yeah. Well, and apparently, so you saw that. Only two people said they were going to vote for Malcolm over Denise.
Mm-hmm.
But I read in a write-up from Dalton Ross that Malcolm claims that this was a ruse on the part of the cast members, which is a weird, how this is a practical joke I don't quite follow. I don't understand why that's funny. But supposedly at least three people said, like, because they knew that that was going to be a question that Probst would ask.
Yeah.
And at least three of them backstage got together and said, don't put your hand up, even though we totally would have voted for Malcolm.
No.
And Malcolm claims if you look at them.
They're looking at each other?
When they do the hands up thing, like, they're looking at each other and kind of giggling or something, he claims.
I believe it.
So I'll go, I'm kind of interested to go back and watch and see if that's actually true.
I believe it.
Because I thought for sure, even. A, he wins on his own against the two losers, but even against Denise, I thought he wins. Although, it sounds like it would have been close, which makes sense. I mean,
mm-hmm.
they had, like we said, the MVP vote. Like, they had very similar stories. I felt like Malcolm's was, like, the story isn't more compelling, but just, like, in terms of gameplay, he was more compelling.
Mm-hmm.
He won more challenges on his own.
Mm-hmm.
He was definitely the more socially graceful player.
Well,
on the flip side...
He was playing the jury, and rightfully so, because he was definitely going to be in a position potentially at the end to be there, so he had to be more polite.
What do you mean?
Well, because he had to make sure that he was like not offending anyone as he was voting them out, because he knew he had a chance to be there at the end.
Well, right, but Denise was in the same boat.
Yeah, sorry.
I'm not sure I understand what you're saying.
I guess I'm missing my point there.
Okay.
That's right.
Fair enough.
I
really should have gone back and figured out who my horse was, because I may have actually picked the winner here. Because I know it was between Denise and Malcolm.
That can be done. You can go back and find that. I don't recall.
But I should have. I mean, before we started the podcast, I should have figured it out so I could, you know, I could come into the podcast with my chest all puffed out.
If I had to bet money, I think you chose Malcolm. Not to shoot you down.
I think I did too, actually.
Yeah.
Oh well.
Fan vote. I was surprised that
it was Blair.
That Denise wasn't up for that vote. Like, I feel like she was someone I was rooting for a lot. For me, you know, she was definitely up there as a fan favorite. And I guess I was surprised that Lisa was up there as much as she was, given that she was so painfully wishy-washy at times.
And, yeah. I mean, there were definitely moments during the season that where you kind of want to just be like, okay, enough.
Right.
But. I guess maybe, you know, who knows, maybe the loved one's visit might have been a big factor in that.
Yeah, that was definitely a big sympathizer sort of thing. And I have to wonder who's actually voting for fan favorite. Who's taking the time to text in?
That's true. That's true.
Jonas and I like to analyze X Factor, and we're always thinking about where the teenage girl votes go, because that basically determines who wins.
Right. Right.
So.
Well, isn't that why, like, Well, what about, like, a show like Dancing with the Stars?
That's all, like, people over 55 or something. I don't know. Like,
well, and my wife.
Is she voting, though? Is she voting?
She's not voting.
Yeah.
She's not voting. Well,
right.
But you think the people over 55 are voting? That would involve knowing how to
text. I think they do. No, they don't text. They go online and you vote online.
Oh, you can vote online?
Yeah. You go to the website and you vote. Yeah, they don't make it text.
I guess that's
a little different. They know how their bread is buttered.
Yeah.
They know.
Okay. So shall we talk about the new season? Wow, we're long here. Look at this. We're at a $1.45.
Yeah, we're really out of way to like clip
this somewhere.
Let's talk about the new season real quick. A, back in the Philippines, not surprising. I think it's a great setting. And also, it's a very pro-American sort of place where, like, you know, they love American culture. They take everything they can from American culture there. So, this is one more thing, and I'm sure they're glad to have it. So,
sure.
All right, fans versus favorites. 10 fans, 10 favorites, and my favorite selection is Eric the Red, Eric Reichenbach.
Oh yes,
going
so
from fan to favorite, which is
yes, indeed, yes. He is like the rep, the transitional. Rep from the original fans versus favorites. Plus, I mean, he's just so, like, he's got a great redemptive story after, like, maybe not anymore being the number one boneheaded move, but definitely.
Who replaced him?
I feel like there was one recently that I can't think of.
Tyson?
Off the top of my head. The one that comes to mind, though, is James.
Going with two hidden menials in his pocket?
Yeah, going out with two in his in pocket. Although, when was that? That might have been before.
It might have been before. What about JT giving Russell Hans a hidden immunity idol?
See, that's the one. That's one of those ones that I give a pass to
because
I feel
the theory was right.
Yeah, exactly. There was potential there, and it was not nearly as. It's just not nearly as boneheaded as like James going out with two when there's only three chances left to play him.
Right.
And Eric just handing it away at Tribal Council only to be voted out right away. There's another one, and I can't think of what it is. I should probably do a quick Google search on boneheaded survivor moves.
All right, other cast members include Corinne from Gabon, who you didn't remember. What I remember from her is being just one of those very outspoken people. She's very divisive. She'll make for excellent television. Like, there's, like, no doubt in my mind that she will be.
I guess I don't remember this one at all.
She will be either voted out early or go to the end just for her ability to incite others.
Yeah.
We have Brenda from Nicaragua, who is the Miami cheerleader, who is amazing. I think she's great.
She's not amazing. She drives me nuts. She was so like.
Drive me nuts.
She was too queen bee about it all, and just like.
But that's what we want. We want people who are take charge. We want people who are like. Seize the game by the neck and ring
it
out.
No, but she let it go to her head, and it was just not like she just wasn't good.
Well,
like,
this is her redemption
like, the whole,
story.
Like,
this is
you
her
can't
redemption
scramble
story
because that looks weak.
This is her redemption story.
All right,
she was doing great, but she has to adapt.
Okay, and then we got three
from Redemption
three returners
Island.
From Redemption Island,
right. Including one person voted out at the very first Tribal Council.
Yeah, of these three, one is a good call.
Who's the one good call?
Who
Philip Shepherd?
Of course it's Philip Shepherd. Of course he's, like, because he's, I mean, because he's just compelling and he's interesting. Andrea Belke, I'm not sure.
Belke. Silent O, I think.
She, I have no interest in her.
I do. I'm all for her.
She's, you just like her because you
she's
think
pretty
she's good to look at.
Good to look at.
Which
I think she's
not...
scrappy. I think you blocked her out. I think she's scrappy. She was always
she
in a position.
She was mildly scrappy.
She was always
she
in a position where
she too...
never had control, but she still fought to, like, the final five or whatever.
I guess. I don't know.
She was scrappy.
Okay, but Francesca, come on.
She's
like,
she's funny. She's likable.
That's just an awful call. There's so many other people who are more interesting to bring back than her. I mean, the thing is here is like they're trying really hard to not go back too far. I guess they're trying to really call on recent stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Although, based on the fact that they've got three from Redemption Island and three from South Pacific, like I can't help but think that like the cupboard is bare. You know, like these are not these
we
are
we have
mediocre.
Not had the greatest seasons of late, except for the ones that
well,
had all
right.
stars.
Right, so you got to go into the Wayback Machine and get people.
Nah, like, well, they wanted also people who hadn't been on the show again. Like they wanted only people who had been on once. They didn't want any three timers, which I think is a good idea.
Okay, well, I think that's good, but I don't know. I feel like there were other people. Papa Bear would be a better choice. I feel like than some of these people.
Mm.
Papa Bear from South Pacific.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
No, all right.
When did he ever play? What was his game?
I don't know. I just liked him. I think he was my horse. Maybe that's why I want him back.
Yeah.
He was my horse.
He was your horse. Yeah, I remember that.
Okay, so then we got three from Survivor South Pacific.
Yeah, Johnny Cochran and Brandon Hans.
Two out of the three, I think, are good calls.
Yeah. Don, I'm with you on Don. Not a good call.
I completely disagree. Don, I think, is the good one to bring.
Oh, you don't like Hans?
Hans. I'm out on Hans, man.
He brings that the guy crazy. Was...
What?
He brings the crazy.
I guess I just grew so tired of him.
Well, that's kind of how I feel about Philip. You're excited about Philip. I'm kind of tired of Philip.
See, because Philip was just like comical weird.
He was delusional.
Brandon was like a more aggressive version of Blair.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I will credit Lisa's stance on bringing religion to the game. Even though she is very devoutly religious, she decided that it was not something that had its place in the game.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a great attitude to bring.
Which, by the way, I just remembered, I forget where it was, someone said something, I think, oh, that's what it was. In the reunion, we overlooked one thing. I was really impressed, I was very much anticipating Abby's reaction, because you know the question had to come, and thank goodness Jeff didn't drop the ball on this one. Like, you know, how do you feel having watched it all now, etc.? Like, what is your... reflection on it all, and she's, you know, she seemed to be taking it all very well and to heart and feeling like, yeah, you know, like I'm not the person I thought I was or whatever. But the funny thing was that she referred to herself as passive aggressive, and Stacy and I both like nearly jumped out of our seats and were like, no, you are aggressive aggressive. There's nothing passive about you.
Yeah, no, I got it. I'm with you. I'm with you.
I just thought it was hilarious. But at the same time, I did want to give Abby her props. You know, she, despite being completely despicable for the majority of the season, and not even despicable, just annoyingly fly off the handle about things and whatever, she's won me back a little bit through her through her desire to reform or whatever.
I guess.
I like Dawn coming back.
I don't know how you watch that season and decide not to make some changes in your behavior.
Well, right, exactly. I like Dawn coming back, I guess, because she's kind of like the Dara Torres, you know?
She was scrappy, too. She's a scrappy, you know, older player. And
well, she also looked kind of like Dara Torres, if I recall correctly.
Vaguely. And our boy Malcolm coming back.
Malcolm and Cochran early on, they're my early favorites for this thing.
Out of the favorites. I shared with Jonas was that Malcolm will be an unknown quantity because...
Yes, exactly. He's just right. Like
Russell
in Heroes Villains.
Correct, yes.
Yes.
Right.
Which is interesting.
Which means he'll be able to play the game he wants to play. No one will know... How he played before.
Well, and he's... and the thing for him is, though, is, like, what kind of, like, recovery is he get for this, though?
Minimal. And you saw it on Russell's face after his two seasons. He was worn.
Yeah, but, like, so is he going to... I mean, is he going to be... Does he get a month in the real world?
Before the next one?
Yeah, does he... Or weeks. Does he... I mean, does he even
weeks.
Come back? Does he
no,
just
he doesn't
stay
come
out
back.
There?
He stays out there. It's weeks that he has to recover...
You think so?
Yeah.
Well, actually, I should look at... they might have the filming dates up there for everything here on the wiki page. Sometimes they have it.
Mm-hmm.
Filming dates were through the 25th of April on this season.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see if they have them posted for Carol Moen here. They don't have the filming dates, just that the premiere is on February 13th of next year. Mark your calendars, boys and girls. cancel your Valentine's plans. It's going to be a very Survivor Valentine's Day.
Man, Stacey's going to love that. Sorry, Stace.
Yeah.
Got to record.
I got you Necco candy knife in the backs for Survivor Valentine's.
All right, let's wrap this up. What do you say?
I think we should. I mean, is there even anything else to talk about, or do I just hit the Twitter here?
Let's hit the Twitters and the other things.
All right, our Twitter handle is. By the way, shout out to our boy Mike K from SoCal. We got an email from him, and it's glad to hear he's still with us. Our Twitter handle is at Tribal Podcast. Our email address is podcast@tc.vanb.net, and you can find our RSS feed on the web at tc.vanb.net.
Yep. Thank you for emailing in again, Michael K from SoCal, and yep. I hope you're feeling better. Hope everything's going well with that, and we'll see all of you, not just Mike K, February-ish.
Indeed.
At that point. Anything else, Chris?
Nope, that's all.
All right, thanks, guys, and we'll see you next time.